Welcome to another episode of the Product Coalition European Tour, the London series, where today I'm very excited to be joined by Amelia Kugczynska from userpilot.com.
Thank you.
Welcome, Amelia. And James Woodley, my co-host for all of the London episodes.
Hello.
Thank you, James.
Glad to be here.
First of all, I want to give a shout out to our location host, which is Digital Directories. They're a legal tech startup which provides a platform for people to make informed decisions about legal issues and contact legal experts. Originally founded in Paris in 2015, the French site has over 3,500 lawyers, and due to its success, a sister site in Belgium was launched in 2018, followed by Italy and the UK in 2019. Now, this tour and every single podcast is dedicated to raising awareness and support for bushfire-affected communities and wildlife in Australia. So if you have enjoyed any of the episodes, or you do enjoy this episode that me and Amelia and James are going to be talking about, which is all about product onboarding, please consider supporting the causes, which you can do at bushfire.productcoalition.com. I'm going to be visiting 5 cities across Europe to interview over 50 product professionals, leaders, etc., to gain insights, knowledge, and experience to share with you, the Product Coalition global community. And if you've just joined the Product Coalition or discovered it recently, welcome. We're a global community of 500,000 readers, 6,000 Slack members, and thousands of podcast listeners. Now, before we get stuck in, I must give a huge thanks to the following brands and individuals that have been major donors to the tour fundraiser so far. Now, the first is UserPilot that Amelia here is from. And I'm very pleased to call out UserPilot as a big donor to the cause. So thank you so much to the UserPilot team for contributing, helping the communities and wildlife of Australia with your donation. UserPilot is a code-free user onboarding and adoption tool designed especially for product management teams. UserPilot helps to increase conversion, user retention rates, and reduce churn by guiding new users to their first aha moment with interactive walkthroughs, contextual product tours, and onboarding checklists. It allows product managers to build fully customizable, behavior-triggered in-app experiences with a simple visual editor. Go to userpilot.com to grab a demo and get a free trial. Next up is Shobit Chug. Shobit is the intentional product manager. Shobit's a Google product manager, and he helps product managers become product leaders and have careers they can be proud of. Go to intentionalproductmanager.com and sign up for Shobit's free class on the habits that turns product managers into exceptional product leaders and help them move through their careers fast. Convincing users to adopt new features is hard. When you're only communicating with them via email and blog posts, it's even harder to get traction. Product-led teams like Mixpanel and Flexport know that the best time and place to capture engagement is when a user is already inside the product. That's why they use Chameleon to drive feature adoption, build onboarding flows, and gather user feedback. This is all possible without code, so engineers can focus on developing what customers really need next. Try Chameleon's product success platform at trychameleon.com/success. Thank you to the Chameleon team for supporting. Two other individuals I'd like to thank are Rich Mironov and Chris Miles. Amelia, welcome.
Hi.
Looking forward to getting stuck into this. We're going to be chatting about product onboarding. James, product onboarding from an engineering perspective?
It's an interesting topic. I'm actually waiting to see what we're talking
there
about
we
here
go.
Because it's not a phrase I'm used to.
Cool.
So, yeah, from an engineering standpoint, very interested in this one.
Nice. Before we get stuck in, Amelia, though, we have a bit of an icebreaker on the podcast. So in Melbourne, it was like a locals guide. In Sydney, it was a pub quiz. For London, I've invented the game called Products Invented in London or Not. And I'm going to give you a product. James has got a product for you. And you've got to guess, was it invented in London or not?
Okay.
All right. So here we go. Cream makeup. This is typically used in movies. Invented in London or not?
Max Factor, right?
Yes, it is Max Factor.
Huh.
But Max Factor isn't from London.
Oh, damn. Oh, New York, isn't it?
No.
Polish, really?
Maximilian Faktorowicz.
Wow.
He's the founder of Max Factor Cosmetics Company, and he popularized the term makeup. He did this by inventing a thinner grease paint in a cream form used for motion picture use at the turn of the last century.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know.
Well, when you told me of you being born in Poland, I thought I've not yet sat down with someone from Poland, so let's dig into things invented by people from Poland. And there we go.
That's the thing. A lot of Polish companies use sort of foreign names and foreign branding to basically get more recognition and more, I know, probably just trust, customer trust abroad. So, yeah, so that's probably another example.
And he had a name that was perfect.
Yeah.
Maximum Factor.
Yeah.
But exactly. There you go, Maximilian Faktorowicz.
It was written in the stars for him, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So product number two, Wi-Fi technology, London or not?
Not.
Correct. Where do you think it was?
Somewhere in, let's say, in the US.
So that's what I said when I first read this, but it's actually Australian.
Okay.
So developed in 1992 by John O'Sullivan and the CSIRO, which Jay reliably tells me is the government science agency in Australia. The core parts of the technology came out of research in the mid-1970s. Today it's used by more than a billion people.
There we go.
There you are. Yeah.
Every day's a school day. Now, Amelia, if you were going to Buckingham Palace for tea with the Queen, there's no wrong answer here, just out of interest. Would you choose a cab, tube, rideshare, bike, scooter, or walk to head to Buckingham Palace?
I love walking.
Yeah.
I'm really big into walking.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, and any weather in London?
No.
Let's push the boundary. Do you know how to walk from here to Buckingham Palace?
I would probably use Google Maps. I would make it there.
And do you have a favourite landmark in London?
Favourite landmark? Let me think. I really like Shoreditch. I like, you know, the street markets there.
Right, nice.
And yeah.
Cool,
that's
cool.
Probably it. A lot of favourite landmarks in London. It's like, you know, you can never get bored of London.
Yeah.
I haven't seen like half of it, probably.
Plenty of beautiful spots. And to be honest, every guest been on the podcast is somewhere different.
Said something new,
to show the variety.
Yeah.
There's a quote, and I never remember who it's by, but someone said, if you bought a London, you bought a life.
So. Alexandra Pope.
Was it?
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good. Let's get stuck into product onboarding. So I'm really interested in this because obviously product onboarding has gone from a thing that people just did as part of building products, if you think of software through the ages, and more so I'd say in the last maybe 10 years, it's become very niche and specialized. And for product success, product onboarding says so much to a user about what the product is going to be and where they either get value from it or not quite early on. So I'm really looking forward to talking through this with you. Do you mind sharing a little bit about your career progression into ending up at User Pilot and joining us today?
I was just about to say that a year and a half ago, I didn't have a clue about product onboarding. I mean, I was already working as a marketer in the SaaS context, but I assumed like, well, it's kind of enough to have a little product tour and a few emails. So when somebody signs up, I send them like a bunch of emails, you know, every day, and then they are onboarded and that's it. And that's actually what a lot of SaaS businesses see onboarding still. So what you just said is like so spot on, that is becoming a very niche, but at the same still like underutilized tool. And I was reading this book, Build by HubSpot, about like, well, how software has moved into this product-led growth era, which was like really eye-opening because like now software has become so democratized. Everybody makes the decision what they are using in the workplace, regardless of the size of the company. So it's not the executives, it's not the managers who make the decisions, it's actually the individual employees who are responsible from, you know, so it's very bottom-up. How I ended up in User Pilot. So I was working on Postfity, which is a social media scheduling app, and I'm still involved in that project. But in June, I met Aza, who's the head of growth at User Pilot at SASTA in Paris, the conference, and we hit it off. We did like content swap, and then we stayed in touch. He liked my writing. We did a few guest posts, and then he sent me over like, you know, a part-time marketing manager job offer, asking if I know someone who might be interested. And, you know, I kind of had some free time. So I thought like, yeah, actually, that sounds really, really interesting. So let's, you know, see how it goes. And that's basically the story. So now I'm really exploring product onboarding and seeing all the mistakes I have made in the past with like the various SaaS projects I have worked on. Because my background is, I used to be a copywriter, then I kind of progressed into content marketing as such, and then I got really interested in SaaS as a business model. is so scalable, so cool, right? This become like the majority of my like consulting clients. I worked with a lot of different SaaS businesses, and I've seen a lot of different kind of approaches to onboarding and strategies when it comes to customer acquisition. But again, like going back to this product-led growth, it's not, you know, top down that you can like grow just with sales and marketing, and really making people see the value of your product very quickly is what any SaaS business should start from. So that's really where the onboarding comes in. And
great, thank you. So when I think back to onboarding, let's go back 10, 12 years ago, getting into products then, it was all about, well, firstly, it wasn't called onboarding. It was, what do we need from the customer to give them an account?
Mm.
And it was all about us being the product or the business team, and less about how can we do this in a way that converts well, that really shares the experience and the tone of the product. So can you tell us, in your opinion, why does onboarding matter? Why is it important for product-led growth?
Yeah, so just like coming back to what you said, what it used to look like 10 years ago, I mean, that's also because of the difference in terms of who's the key decision maker and the difference in pricing of software products. Like back then, they were still very expensive. Yeah. So the ICOs or executives, basically marketing executives, used to make these decisions, like basically what's compatible with the IT environment in the company, like what is needed from the standpoint of, well, their goals, not the goals of the end user, right? So now it's very different. Also, a lot of very small companies, even, you know, self-employed people are using a lot of software in their businesses. So their needs are very different, and software as a service companies need to account for that. So that's why onboarding has become a lot more important and changed from asking all these questions that, you know, companies need it for their account to actually showing the user the value of the product for their particular use case. And that's something that a lot of companies are still doing wrong, is that they don't personalize the onboarding. And some of them are still, you know, in the past decade. Yeah. So basically they still ask these 10 questions instead of a welcome screen on the, you know, the sign up flow can sometimes consist of like, 10 even more questions. Mm. So we found in our research, we did like a research of 100 software as a service companies, and we basically went through the onboarding of each of them for 2 hours each. And we found that, like, as far as I remember, it was like 7 or 9% of the companies are still asking these 10 questions on the sign up, you know, screen. So it's insane, because like, I personally, you know, I'm like the classic millennial, I have attention span of a goldfish. So like, ask me more than 2 questions and I'm gone.
Mm. Yep.
And the same refers to onboarding. If it's not personalized, if it's not useful for the end user, if it's like just for the company to, you know, get the value from the user, then like a lot of the end users will be gone before they have even started.
Mm.
Because people don't have time. We're using so much more software than 10 years ago now.
Yeah. But one of the big changes for me that sort of has run parallel this is that growth of the subscription economy as well, where before it was all around get the person to pay, and then, you know, like the idea of selling apps in the app store.
Yeah.
And then they're committed to having to create an account. So now that, you know, the idea of freemium, well, we need to win them as a freemium customer before we could possibly ever think about charging them. And that's certainly driven the idea of onboarding being a thing that lasts maybe a few, you know, 10 seconds to a few minutes, to something that can go on for weeks on end in some SaaS businesses, I imagine, as they get to know the customer and get to personalize the experience to try and win them from freemium into a premium paying customer. How can personalization be achieved as part of the onboarding experience? What are some of the patterns you mean when you say a personalized onboarding experience?
Yeah, so you kind of just started actually talking about it, right? That this is the essential element of converting the freemium user into a paying customer. So actually personalizing the onboarding experience for them is pretty much the only way to show them the value. And that's what a lot of companies are still not doing, but what is actually achievable with tools that allow this branched personalized onboarding, say like user pilot and a few other alternatives. Basically, and that's something we also found in the research, actually over 60% of software as a service companies don't have any welcome screen.
Right.
And only like 38% actually use the welcome screen to ask additional questions about the new user.
Mm.
So basically, if somebody signs up for your app, you should ask them a few, like literally 3-4 questions about who they are, what is their role in the company, and what they are trying to achieve with your product, why they signed up. That's very, very important to kind of understand their use case. So, for instance, let's take an email marketing tool. Somebody may use an email marketing tool for sending newsletters to their audience, the blog audience. That's very different from doing actual email marketing. And that's also very different from, say, communicating with existing clients if they have their own database, or communicating with their employees, or, for instance, just collecting subscribers, right? So there are at least 5, like, really basic use cases that would be really different.
Right.
And then the needs of this user are very different depending on this use case. So the purpose of personalized onboarding is to take them to the first activation point so they can get their first like aha moment, right? So yeah. Basically they see the value of the product for the particular reason they came to the product for. So yeah. Basically the first goal of personalized onboarding is to understand the goal of the user, right? And the biggest mistake that a lot of SaaS companies still make is that they treat onboarding as a way of showing the user around. So like proudly presenting all the amazing features that we have in like a 20 tooltip walkthrough. I wouldn't remember half of it, honestly.
And I'm sure we've all hit skip.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we hit skip and we get frustrated and just like annoyed because this is not what we came here for.
Yeah.
Like it also shows a level of arrogance because it means that SaaS tool team doesn't really care about what I need from it. Right. So it doesn't make sense. So basically, we in the personalized onboarding scenario, we learn the goal and then we show the users basically, you know, the shortest way to get to that goal. So, yeah, going back to that example with email marketing, say if our persona A wants to collect subscribers, after learning that from the welcome screen, we would show them how to create a sign-up form with our email marketing tool.
Okay.
But if somebody already comes with a database of contacts and wants to communicate with their employees, then we show them in the first tooltip how to upload basically their mailing list to the tool. So that already shows how very different the onboarding scenario can be depending on what we learn in the welcome screen.
Yeah.
So this is all what personalized onboarding is about, showing the value depending on the goal. Yeah. So.
And this is all about how you build your product, isn't it? It's not going out and asking questions to a prospective user base. It's allowing them to give you those answers.
Yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah, yeah. But can also drive, you know, product development, of course.
When building products, onboarding is always first part of the build as well. Mm. So it's for me, it's always when everyone's like rallied up. We've got the devs, we know how when the technology choices have been made. The first opening UX has been tested and proving out. We've taken the first stories through discovery and we've proven value of what we're going to build, what our first release is, and everyone's so pumped up. So I can see how easy it is for people to overlook what we're trying to achieve strategically through the onboarding experience because everyone's so excited to now be building the product for the first time.
Probably the first demo as well, isn't it? You want to show this thing works.
First showcase is the end of the onboarding experience, etc.
This is actually, this is an interesting comment. But like we shouldn't be showing how it works. We should be showing what you can achieve with it because like people are not interested how it works. They're interested in what benefits they can get from it.
Mm.
So it's very important to sort of put yourself in the shoes of your user and, you know, sort of reverse engineer the onboarding for them.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Once you've got a nice, tight onboarding experience, what does optimizing that look like? Is it around more qualitative testing? Is it around collecting more data to make decisions? How would you suggest the optimization of an onboarding experience? Once you've got your first one that you feel is now really good and tied into illustrating value and getting the user to that goal quickly, How do you improve upon that?
So you need to be really data driven. So the next step after you have collected the initial information, like demographic and use case information about user, then you really need to see what the user is doing with your tool. So basically, for instance, User Pilot has this user analytics. You can see how often people are logging in, what they are using, what they are clicking, what experiences they are clicking, what they are doing next, right? And then you analyze these data and create experiences. So there's like the second layer of onboarding. The first one we discussed was like minimum viable onboarding. So getting the user to the first activation point so they see value and stick. But once they are already using the product, the second aim of the onboarding is to show the secondary features and to transform, you know, the activated user into a power user. Now, that can be only done if we actually analyze their behavior and respond to the actions they perform in the app with further onboarding, in-app messages, modals, etc. So a good example from HubSpot, for instance, if you copy and paste emails in HubSpot, after a while, they tell you, like, tired of copying and pasting.
You know,
you can duplicate the emails, right? So that's a very good example of contextualized onboarding, which is interactive and responds to user behavior, actually. So that's something that I would say you should do to improve upon it. And then also take your onboarding out of the app, because onboarding messages, the in-app messages, tend to be very short, right? And they're sort of very, you know, time sensitive. So somebody sees your modal and closes it and it disappears. So a good way to take it from there is to reinforce these messages via email. And that's something we found that also very few SaaS companies are doing. So responding to user behavior in-app and then sending follow-ups via email. And that's something that actually is very effective because the emails stay there. So the users can go back and refer to them if they need to. Mm. And you can offer like additional resources in the emails. So for instance, if you see someone struggles with a particular feature, right, you can offer them, you know, link to your calendar so they can book a slot Or you can offer them like a video you have recorded how to use this particular feature. Or you can offer them a case study from another user that illustrates how to do something effectively. So that's also how user onboarding can basically drive product-led success, that you help your users based on the real problems they have before they even have the chance to reach out to you. Also, I would add another way to improve your onboarding is to celebrate the milestones with your users, and that's something that also very few SaaS businesses do. So when somebody actually reaches this key activation moment, they have done something successfully, they uploaded their contact list, they send their first newsletter, right? Congratulate them on that, right? That gives them the little boost and shows more that you care, shows that you're more personalized in your approach. And then also offer some more helpful resources, right? Offer feedback. So actually the user learns. And through that education, they can get better results. So they will be more likely to stick with your app, basically.
Okay.
There's a friction point in onboarding in nearly every single product that still makes me feel uncomfortable. And that's when you have to channel switch. When you're going through and you've given your email address and you feel like, oh, this is cool. Let's find out about this. And they go, thanks for your email address. See you later. Until we know who you are and we trust this email address, we don't want anything to do with you.
That's a problem.
And in sometimes that's for obviously trust or in highly regulated products or environments. It's always rationalized as a thing you just have to do. But where it's avoidable, what patterns have you seen work around? How do we trust the email is authentic or the person is a real person, etc.?
Yeah, actually we found that 55% of SaaS companies require the users to confirm their email before they can even see the dashboard. And this is like lethal because, nobody really wants to give away their personal information, email, everything before they see if the product is something they would, you know, like to interact with at all. So it's actually not necessary to do that. You can find ways around it. For instance, you can use like a sniper link. So basically it works like you give the user a confirmation link in your app and then they can click right to the email you send them, the confirmation email in their mailbox. from the app level. So this reduces the friction that you mentioned in terms of channel switching. Awesome. But that's one way to do it. Another way is to allow the user to play around and to use like a limited functionality before they even, you know, confirm their email. But that also depends on your business model. So generally speaking, frictionless onboarding, the less friction you have, the better. But in some very specific cases, if you have a very complex product, for instance, and the value would be very difficult to show if the user just, you know, launches the product themselves, it's better to invite them to a demo first. But that's kind of like a different scenario than we generally talk about. Yeah,
I've seen some difficult examples of that with two-factor authentication. You know, it's a big thing at the moment. Security needs to be tight. All of a sudden, you can't do anything unless you've got your phone and they've sent you a text and you've got no signal and this hasn't come through and you've just lost the will to live at that point. And I'm not using this product now. I'll come back to it another day. And do you? Sometimes not.
I'm hitting that every single day at the moment. Yeah. Obviously, from Australia, all of my logins are in Australia. All my 2FA that's text message based. It goes to my Australian number, but I've not got that SIM card at the moment.
Yeah.
So actually, where that friction is still there in the terms of 2FA, but is less so, is where I'm using the authenticator apps instead of text message. Mm. And it's never had an impact on me quite like on this trip, where I've taken my original SIM card out, even though it's roaming on, the effort to have to switch a SIM card to access a product has shown me the true value of the authenticator apps over text message authentication. And I've really seen the power of authenticator.
There are some apps that are doing it quite well, though. You know, you just get the little message come down, is this you? Yes. You know, you haven't got to load it up, wait for it to recycle the number and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there are still secure ways, but better ways of doing it, right?
Can I ask, James, in the engineering capacity, when you've built or led teams on the onboarding experience, have you ever challenged the thinking on that? Is it something from a development engineering perspective, you just follow the pattern the UX give you, or have you felt the need to challenge it?
Normally just followed the pattern that UX has given us because, you know, they're the experts.
Right.
There has been once in a previous position where we had what we called an FTUX, the first time user experience.
Yeah.
And it was very much as you were describing there with, you know, a blanket modal saying, have you seen that we've got this new button? And okay, got it. Have you seen that we can do this? Sure. It's like, I was trying to use my own piece of software that I was part of the team writing and had to click 5 times to get to the feature I was now trying to test. So that kind of made me think, if I'm not enjoying this process, why would a user?
Yeah.
So that was one of the times. And I, you know, brought it up and said, we need to rethink this. The decision was, okay, we won't make it modal, so you can skip it. It's like, halfway house, okay, we'll move on from here. You know, that's in the fight for another day. Which is the wrong attitude, but, you know, we had features to deliver. So
okay.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think you need, you know, real thought around it to think of the user.
The worst is when you can't actually skip it. Mm. But it's kind of like so deeply rooted in the idea of institutional education, right? It's probably kind of hardwired into people's brains. Like anyone who's been through an education system, like a traditional education system, has this like top-down approach to things. And then I think subconsciously SaaS founders apply this paradigm to their user onboarding. So instead of letting the user learn by doing and kind of just support them on the way, they want to show them everything around from the start, which isn't the best approach because that's not how we learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a conversation like we're doing, a dedicated podcast just to onboarding, hopefully helps engineers that are listening or watching to now have more input.
I think, to be honest, to know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of times engineers kind of get to the point of the story after all of this has happened. You know, the user's logged in and, you know, you're given when then's come out of it and I'm a user that's logged in with this permission and all that kind of thing. The engineers are kind of further back. So it would be good to get everyone in the process that much earlier.
Mm-hmm. Amelia, is there an onboarding experience that for the audience listening and watching that you've seen in the last few days, weeks, etc., that really stands out to you that they could go and visit and have a look at as a great onboarding experience for the context of that product? Is there anyone who stands out to you?
Let me think. So actually, my colleague did an onboarding teardown on Box, which is a pretty complex product. I haven't used it myself, but this was a really good example of how to onboard users on a complex product through that contextual onboarding. So actually showing them by doing and guiding them through all the steps with like driven actions. Mm. Personally, I think StoryChief's onboarding was pretty good. That's a tool that I'm using all the time, and it's a godsend for anyone who's involved in like content editing process.
Right.
It's like a shared dashboard, basically, you know, sort of Google Docs on steroids for copywriters. So you can invite copywriters to the dashboard, and you can collaborate on the process, and collects a lot of features, say like Yoast SEO from the SEO standpoint.
Yeah, right.
You know, it gives them some feedback. You can comment on things. You can then export the posts to several channels via plugins, which is really great because it saves so much time. And what they did with their onboarding is pretty much what we discussed earlier. So in the welcome screen, they had these three questions, like asking me why I'm using it. And then they actually personalized the onboarding based on what I wanted to use it for. So that was quite helpful. And they also had a video in the one of the first screens,
right,
which was just like showing me an overview of the tool based on my use case, as I learned later, apparently, from one of their team members.
Yeah, right.
It's not like it was one video for everyone. It was a different video depending on the use case. So that was quite helpful. Yeah. And it's quite surprising because very, very few software companies are implementing video as part of their onboarding, which, well, is like the medium of choice.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. We've got the bandwidth to watch it so freely.
Fantastic. Do you find, you know, over and above sort of A/B testing, if you went back onto that website, selected, I am, you know, looking for this use case, do you get a different experience?
Yeah.
Or is it, so there are multiple.
So that's the point, yeah. Exactly.
But a different experience for the same selection of use case is what I'm thinking. Or would you get that same journey? You know, if you tick the same boxes, do you get the same journey each time? Just wondering if there's, I'm not necessarily talking A/B testing to see which ones works better, but just as there are multiple ways to do the same thing kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, now that I've been sort of more involved in onboarding, I see all the time when I'm using software, like, why aren't you helping me with this? Why do I need to figure this out on my own? You know, it really could be so much more developed that way. You know, I would probably, there are apps that are just like innately simple to use. Mm. And this is what ultimately software engineers are striving to achieve, right? But obviously there is still some learning curve.
Mm.
So if the onboarding could help me reduce this learning curve, like this is the ultimate goal. So I can achieve the results I want to achieve with this tool faster, right? Mm. So, yeah, as long as it's working the way it's intended.
Yeah, of course,
to be, of course, yeah.
Thanks so much, Amelia, for talking product onboarding with me. Thanks, James.
Thank you. Yeah,
I really enjoyed spending some headspace just in the onboarding part of product design, which is fantastic. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you're listening in or watching on YouTube, thank you for listening to this whole episode. If you've enjoyed this episode or any of the episodes from the Product Coalition European Tour, please remember that this time is dedicated to raising awareness and funds for the bushfire affected communities and wildlife of Australia. And if you'd like to support the cause, there's three causes, in fact, you can do. You can support, that's the Country Firefighters of Victoria, the wildlife, or the National Bushfire Fund. You can do so by heading to bushfire.productcoalition.com. And a big final thank you to the user pilot team for supporting those causes through the Product Coalition Tour so significantly. Thanks all. Until next episode. Good luck with your onboarding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.